but simply, what's worked for me might work for you. Appendix. A word about ADHD and medications. In listening to this audiobook, especially Chapter 6 about true ADHD, you might wonder if you yourself have ADHD. If you do have it, the chances are you don't know that you do because few doctors know how to diagnose ADHD in adults. Learning that you have ADHD is actually very good news, because the chances are excellent that treatment could dramatically change your life for the better. Most adult ADHD is misdiagnosed as depression, an anxiety disorder, a personality disorder, an eating disorder, substance abuse, or a sex, gambling, or shopping addiction, or some or all of the above. At least 75% of ADHD in adults is never diagnosed. No condition in all of medicine has such a shocking lack of diagnosis. The science exists to diagnose adult ADHD, but the medical profession and the general public are insufficiently educated about it. This is a true tragedy, because there is no condition in all of the behavioral sciences where proper diagnosis and treatment can lead to a more dramatic improvement in a person's life. I have seen literally thousands of careers turn around, not to mention marriages saved, once the diagnosis of ADHD is made. The major tip-off that you might be suffering from undiagnosed adult ADHD is unexplained underachievement coupled with inconsistent performance, flashes of brilliance, followed by lack of follow-through or a blank mind. If you see yourself or someone you know in this brief description, consult an expert who actually does understand ADHD. The consultation could dramatically change your life or the life of the person you know. Since I specialize in treating ADHD, I've been prescribing medications to treat it for decades. I have enormous experience in their use, and I know exactly what good and what harm they can do. Given to the right patient in the right way, the medications can be a godsend. Given to the wrong patient or given in the wrong way, the medications can be dangerous, sometimes even lethal. The same is true, incidentally, of aspirin, penicillin, or water. Two basic molecules are turned into the various stimulant medications currently available by prescription. All are controlled substances, highly regulated and supervised by a federal agency, the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA. One molecule is amphetamine, AMP. A Rhode Island doctor named Charles Bradley used it for the first time in the United States 75 years ago to treat what we now call ADHD. Bradley originally gave it to the behaviorally disturbed children on his unit to treat headaches. But, to his surprise, these children became far more focused and ambitious and less emotionally volatile after taking the pill. This was a great breakthrough not only in the treatment of ADHD, but in the understanding of the brain. The other molecule is methylphenidate, MPH. First synthesized in 1944, it wasn't used to treat problems with focus until a scientist named Leandro Panizzon, who worked for the pharmaceutical giant Ceba, developed a new version of it in 1954. He gave it to his wife to boost her blood pressure before she played tennis. Since her name was Rita, Panizzon named his concoction Ritalin. Today, it's simply called Ritalin. Rita found that the Ritalin not only boosted her blood pressure, but also improved her focus on the game. These two molecules, put together in different ways to produce varying durations of action and methods of absorption and release, enter pharmacies as Ritalin, Ritalin LA, long-acting, Concerta, long-acting, Focalin, Focalin XR, long-acting, Metadate, and Daytrana, skin patch, all of which are forms of MPH. or dexedrine, dexedrine spansules, long-acting, Adderall, Adderall XR, long-acting, or Vyvanse, long-acting, all forms of AMP. There is another prescription stimulant called modafinil, marketed as Provigil, which is in a class of its own. These drugs are not approved for the general public absent a diagnosis of ADHD. Since they are controlled substances, they can only be used in highly supervised, controlled settings. When used properly, each of these medications will increase mental focus in 80% of the patients who take them. 20% of the time, they won't work, or they cause intolerable side effects. All tend to suppress appetite. When I am prescribing, the only side effect I allow my patients to suffer is appetite suppression without unwanted weight loss. If the medication causes any other side effects, which may include elevated heart rate or blood pressure, agitation, headache, upset stomach, insomnia, tremor or tics, feelings of hypervigilance or paranoia, blunting of personality or sedation, I ask the patient to discontinue the medication. I only prescribe stimulants for people who have ADHD. If you are properly screened for ADHD and discover that you have it, don't feel bad about it. Adults with ADHD are typically highly creative, intuitive, entrepreneurial, pioneering, and innovative. They tend to think outside the box and be original and tenacious to the point of being stubborn. They rarely give up. They also tend to have a marvelous sense of humor, a sparkle, and a certain charisma. What leads them to underachieve is inconsistent focus and a tendency to space out on details, time management, social niceties, and proper procedure. What if someone who does not have ADHD takes a prescription stimulant? Usually, they have improved focus, just as if someone who does not have a fever takes an aspirin and his body temperature decreases a small amount. But if someone who has a fever takes an aspirin, his body temperature decreases a great deal more. So if someone who has ADHD takes a stimulant and it works, his ability to focus will improve much more than the person who does not have ADHD who takes a stimulant. The media would have you believe that stimulants are overprescribed and dangerous. In fact, they are both under and overprescribed. Many doctors won't prescribe stimulants because they don't believe in ADHD, failing to comprehend that ADHD is not a religious principle, but a well-researched scientific reality. Other doctors prescribe stimulants too frequently in the absence of a proper workup and diagnosis, leading to overprescribing. Stimulants used improperly can cause serious side effects, just as the misuse of any medication can. The media should better inform the general public so that people can appreciate the therapeutic power of stimulant medication and respect it as a useful intervention to be used with care. Readers of this book may say, "I don't have ADHD, but I'd love to take a pill that would help me focus. Could a stimulant medication do that?" The answer is probably yes for most people. But stimulant medications are not currently approved by the FDA in the absence of the diagnosis of ADHD. The catch-22 here is that the vast majority of doctors know little or nothing about ADHD and how it appears in adults. So as an adult, you can't get stimulant medication unless you have a diagnosis of ADHD. But you can't get a diagnosis of ADHD because most doctors, including specialists like psychiatrists and neurologists, don't know enough to recognize it. Over-the-counter medications, herbs, brain boosters. Now we enter into more confusing and controversial waters. Since so much money is at stake, as well as professional turf, it is difficult to nail down the truth about over-the-counter medications for ADHD. The best source for explaining non-prescription brain boosters I've found is Non-Drug Treatments for ADHD by Richard P. Brown, M.D., and Patricia L. Gerbarg, M.D. One, a professor at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons, and the other, an assistant professor at New York Medical College. In my opinion, among the medications that improve focus that are available to the general public, caffeine is by far the best. Brown and Gerbarg disagree with me, citing the many side effects caffeine can have. They recommend instead various herbs, roots, and other natural substances, and cite solid research to back up their claims. Among the substances they tout most highly are rhodiola rosea, Ayurvedic herbs, Bacopa monnieri, ginkgo biloba, ginseng, pycnogenol, and combinations of these marketed under various trade names. You can be your own experimental animal. Just check with your doctor first and try not to spend a lot of money on what is unproven. And I would suggest you read Brown and Gerbarg's book. Some patients tell me that a quick sniff of peppermint oil helps them focus. Or heating rosemary oil so that the scent diffuses through the workplace helps keep people alert. It makes sense to first use what's proven, but to keep an open mind for other possibilities. Just be careful, because the world of natural, alternative, whole, or whatever other buzzword adjective gets applied is a shifty entrepreneur's dream come true. Millions of eager, gullible customers in a field with little regulation. Nonetheless, only by keeping an open mind have I learned the value of many of the suggestions in this book and created my practice as a focus doctor, a specialty that didn't exist until modern life created the need for it. This has been an Audible Studios production of Driven to Distraction at Work, How to Focus and Be More Productive. Written by Edward M. Hollowell, M.D. Narrated by Christopher Kipiniak. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2015, by Edward M. Hollowell, M.D. Production copyright, 2015, by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.